Just real time. You were telling me how this training with the landing craft, and you had your way, and afterwards the officers came up to you to ask to apologise. Can you carry on?
Yes, they said they wanted to withdraw the remark of having me court-martialed for causing a mutiny, and they would like to withdraw it. So Lieutenant Colonel Perry turned around and said, it's up to the corporal. If he accepts your apology. So the two sergeants apologised and said they didn't realise that you were ex-Navy and you knew all about landing craft, which we didn't know nothing about. Will you accept our apologies? And we withdraw our remark. And saw Lieutenant Colonel Perry give the RSM a dig in the ribs. The RSM, Ben Ogden, is shaking his head saying, say you're accepting. So I accept their apology, and everything was roses after that.
So what happened next then?
Then we trained on that for, on and off and running this way and that way.
And whenabouts would this be?
I haven't the faintest idea. It was all hush hush. See, because out there with the jungle drums sort of business, it was kept secret. And the next thing we know is trucks coming up, three of them, with a load of beer on, bottles of beer. One bottle between three men. They told us the war had been over 3 days.
This is the war in Europe or the war in it?
What's called it? DJ Day, when they dropped the atomic bomb. Because we knew nothing about the atomic bomb or anything. And from there, we went to a place just outside Pune. A place called Pashan Camp. We called it Passion Camp because there they sorted out all the old soldiers that was in the army in Burma before the war started, and they'd been out there all the time, and they were sorting them out to send them home. I was fortunate because we got rid of the mules and we got transport, and because I was made MT Corporal, and I was driving a Jeep with a CO in it. And he went down to the station to see the...
Still Colonel Perry.
Lieutenant Colonel Perry. And he saw the men lined up at the railway station at Pune. And give a little speech. At the end, he just... "Boy, lads," jumped in the motor and I had to drive him straight away. And I had a side glance at him, and tears were running down his face. Because I found out later, a lot of them had served with him as much as 15, 20 years. And from there, we went down back to Bombay, which was, about 150 miles from Pune. Got on board to what they call Walrus carriers. They were aircraft carriers, but parent ships, all they carried was aircraft. And they were replacement aircraft for the proper aircraft carriers.
Do you know what its name was, this Walrus carrier?
Yes, one was called the Smiter. And the one we was on was called the Trumpeter.
Trumpeter.
And we was on that for a while.
Where were you going?
And we was told we were going to Singapore. And on the journey going over, a bloke up me says, "Hello, Ginge." And I looked at a naval chap. So I looked at him. I said, "His face is familiar." He said, "It should be." He said, "I was one of the trainees when you were training us for the barges." So we're talking. He said, "Your roommate's on board here, Dusty Miller," because he was a stoker, same as myself. So he took me down below, and sure enough, there was Dusty Miller. And of course, we shook hands and that, chatting away there. And all of a sudden, the Master of Arms come along. He's the equivalent to an RSM, but he's entitled to a salute. And see me in my army gear. "What you doing there?" So the Dusty Miller said, "He's ex-Royal Navy, so I got transferred into the army." He said, "We served together in the Navy." And of course, the old Master Arm said, "Well, what's your Navy number?" So I rattled my Navy number off to him. Oh. And then there was up spirits. They were coming around with a rum. So he said, "I suppose you'd like your rum and all." And I said, "Well, I'm old enough, sir." So he said, "All right." So I had to borrow one of the cups, and he gave me a tot of rum in it. And away he went. And we'd been on it about 48 hours, and I went up to RSM Ben. I've been, I said, "Excuse me, RSM, can I speak to you?" So he said, "Yes, what's it?" "So I'll speak Frank." So he said, "Yes, certainly." I said, "You know, by AFOs, that's Admiral Fleet Orders, any servicemen, man or women, on board any of the HMS ships of the age of 21 and over are entitled to their rum issue." I said, "Well, we've been on it 48 hours, sir," I said, "and it should only be 24. "Oh, you sure?" I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Well, I'm going to find out, and if you make me look a fool, God help you." So, as he said that, the Master at Arms come out of one of the compartments on the deck. The RSM went over and spoke to him. And this Master at Arms looked at me, he grabbed hold of his fist, and he's going like that to me. Because we all had got our rum issue, didn't we? And though he shook his fist at me, he was laughing all the time, because I was very well liked by, especially the sergeants and warrant officers, because they had neaters, that is pure rum. All we got was two and one, that's two of water and one of rum. And just before we came off...
And where were you going to?
Singapore.
You actually went there?
And before we got off, I think it was the day before we got off to go to Singapore, there was what they call slops. That means they have a store open, a clothes store, where you could go and buy clothes. And in the Navy, it was next to nothing. So I wanted some vest and pants and some grey socks. So I went up to the Master at Arms and asked him if it's possible. So he said, "You've got the cheek of the devil, you haven't you?" I said, "Well, I'm a stoker, ain't I, sir?" And of course that started him really laughing. So he said, "Come with me." So they're all lined up, take their turn, brought up the front. And there was a petty officer there with the leading seaman doing the selling and that. He said, "But he's in the army." He said, "Give him your Navy number." So I rolled off my Navy number, and the petty officer looked at me dumbstruck. So I got what I wanted. And of course, I said cheerio to Dusty Miller, and we came off of at Singapore, and we had to hand over the old trucks we had, and we had brand new trucks issued there for us, new Dodges. Bedfords, and we had to load up and go right up to Mersing, 120 miles up.
To where?
Mersing, M-E-R-S-I-N-G, Mersing. And when we got there, That was the battalion's HQ. The battalion was split up into companies, A, B, C and D. And one company went to Johor Bahru, one company went to Port Dickson, and the other one went to Kuala Lumpur. And of course the other company stayed at Mersing, which was headquarter company. And we'd done that for a while. Then the battalion had orders. We all met up at Singapore, and we got on board an LST, landing ship tank. And the last truck on was a 3-ton Chev.
Now, when was this you were leaving?
Pardon?
What month would it be?
It would be round about October, November 45.
So how long had you been there? Just a month?
What?
How long had you been in Singapore?
Oh, about 48 hours. And the last truck on was a Borno Chevrolet. And the driver of it was a chap named Tim Evans. It was a mate, actually. He was ex-Navy. And he went down with malaria. And because being MC Corporal, I had to get my motorbike stuck on one of the trucks. And I had to drive that off. I was the first truck off this landing ship.
Landing where?
Java. Surabaya. Surabaya in Java. And as I got off and drove round where I was told to drive, head up, "Go home, you English bastards," right the way across. Because I was out of the truck, grabbed my Sten gun, and done a nice retreat to the back wheels in case there was any firing done. Well, we go unloaded, and there was no activity. And we went into Surabaya town itself, or whatever, and we was in like a town hall. The 3-tonners was billeted in there, and the 15 underweight trucks was billeted on the other side of the called a parade ground, if you like. And that's where they were in another billet there in private houses. And when we got there, the tables were laid with half the meals finished, green. And because we found out that they've taken to the jungle in Java and that.
Who'd taken to the jungle?
The Javanese, resistance, because they were promised that if they helped to get the Japs out of Java, they will give them their own independence. And because when the war finished, they never got it straight away, so they fought and put all the white Dutch in concentration camp. One in just outside Surabaya, and the other one was over the other side of the island called Batavia. Excuse me. And when we got organised, we had to go and find this concentration camp. When we found it, there was no guards and nothing. But when we went in there, they were terrified. The people in there were women, children, and very old men. And we're trying to speak to them because they nearly all spoke Dutch and Javanese. And we couldn't get them to come out, so I happened to be there with the water wagon. And I went up to the officer, Major Bostock. I said, well, how about if I drove in with a water wagon, turn it round so they can see it, and just turn on the taps on, so they could see the water coming out. Oh, he said, that's a good idea. He said, and when you come back, you better take the ration thing in and four guards. So the three of them jumped on the back and one coming in front with me in this food truck, as you call it. We had bread and that and things. And drove in, turned it around so they could see it, and we just laid some blankets down on the floor, because we didn't have tables to put them on, and thus laid the things on it, and we stepped back, and the rifles we had, we put them, in the back of the truck, so that they could see that we weren't armed. It turned out there was 153 in the camp. That's, you know, like the children, white women, and men and that. And, one of the chaps took a liking to one of the young girls there, and he was a Javanese father, but married to a white woman. That's why he was in the camp. And while we was there, they started going out together, and they got engaged to her. And her name was Toad. And they took us, when they got engaged, we went to the house. When our house, it was a big bungalow, really big. And he served in the Dutch Navy, this Javanese father like, and he was been in the Dutch army, and then he was in the resistance, because when they wouldn't know their independence, he just stayed with his wife, and that's why he was in the camp. And we had what they call a rice table. It's 24 different ways to have rice. Only in a little bowl, about the big of a saucer. And it was really smashing. And what it was in it, I know there were some prawns in it, or cockles, or not cockles, shrimps. And that's the first time I had the honour being in the little crowd that was there, and the senior NCO, who's a full corporal, more substantiated, I had the honour of having the eyeball of the goat, which is a very delicacy to have. And by God, good job I knew how to eat, drink a Bombay oyster. That's raw egg and vinegar. So I got this eye looking at it, and it's looking at me. And I thought, well, here goes. Down, had a drink, and got down. That was a real compliment to me, you know, that I had it. But I'll never forget that. I didn't even taste it. It went straight down. But I would like to go, would like to do it again.
Was there any actual fighting, or did they stay in the jungle?
No, we went out to a rather biggish village. Well, there was a company, a platoon in this rather biggish village, and there was a concrete building. We didn't know what the word was, but we found out it was at a bank. And we had to guard that. Let's put it this way. Accidentally, the doors got blown off it. Because supposed to have been the guerrillas attacking the village. Then, of course, when they got in there, there was piles, literally piles, as much as 2 foot high, of 1,000 guilder notes. But they were Japanese. You could change them in Java, but they were no good once you come out of Java. We finished up using them as toilet paper.
Now, was this an exercise in the bank then?
Pardon?
An exercise. You weren't fighting, it was an exercise.
No, we was waiting there in case there was attack before it came to the main, Surabaya. And, what's it called it? We got relieved and I didn't have to make any report because I was only visiting to see if the transport was all right. And then from there, we come out of Java and got on board.
So there was no fighting in Java? Because I thought you said one of your friends was killed there.
Not fighting in the sense of the word. There was a couple of skirmishes, but no real fighting. But Tim Evans, he got killed in Java.
Was he a private?
Pardon?
Was he a private?
Private Tim Evans. A bullet hit his bandolier and fired set off two rounds that went off inside him. And he's buried out there, just outside Surabaya in Java. And he was my mate. But
what was he like? You've got some stories about him, haven't you?
Oh yeah, he didn't like being ordered. But I got on very well with him because when the officer's about, I gave him an order, he accepted it because he knew that I'd be in trouble if he didn't. But when it was nobody about and I was in charge, I asked him to do a thing for me and he'd do it without arguing. Well, give you an example what he was like. I was guard commander, and the first one I'd ever done. And I wrote it, Lieutenant Russell was the officer in charge, and I had to read out the names of the party that was doing the guard duties. And all of a sudden, this Tim Evans turned around and said, "Excuse me, Corporal, you're 2 men short. Private Sneakers." He said, "No, I don't know his other name." So I have to go to the orderly room and find out. So with that, the officer said, "You carry on, Corporal, set him up." So told them where they had to go and everything. And we was in a place where the guards was on duty. And there was wooden fences in it. And there was 2 chaps in there, supposed to have been in prison, doing some petty thing or other. And all of a sudden I heard something rattling, like a wheelbarrow. And when I looked round, there's this Tim Evans and another one of his mates, bloke named of Agnew, that come from Liverpool, said, Private Sneakers reporting for duty." It was a big tin, a big drum, urn affair of beer. Well, I don't know where to put my face. That shows you what Tim Evans was like. Well, they call it Private Sneakers. And I'll tell you why. You could drink 10, 12 pints of that, not bat an eyelid. And all of a sudden you'll be get up to walk away, and all of a sudden, bomb, as if someone's hit you on the head. And you go, spark out. And that's where you got the name Sneakers. And what's called it? This Lieutenant Russell, came there, and of course he got stuck into it as well. But he only had a couple. And it finished up. I was doing guard, he was doing guard, and so was the two prisoners was doing guard, because the others were all drunk. but that's the funny parts.
But he went to Java in about October or November, but when did you leave?
We came back in May or June, was it? I think it was June.
46?
No, yeah, I'm sure it's June.
46?
In 46, yeah.
So where did you come back to?
Come back to Malaya, and that's where, to Singapore, like, and the battalion stayed there for a couple of days, and they were told that they were recamping just outside Singapore, into Johor Bahru. Johor Bahru, that is the where the causeway goes on to Malaya. And they were there for about 3 weeks. But I wasn't, I was only there for about 7 days when five of us got posted to the divisional HQ, Div HQ. And we got onto the company transport company, because I said we was all drivers. Four of us was, but one wasn't, so he got a job in the transport stores.
And what were your duties like?
Well, we were just running the officers about to different hotels where they used to have a good time, or pictures or dances, whatever was going on in Singapore and in Johor Bahru. And then
did you enjoy it?
Pardon?
Did you enjoy it?
That's what made us stay. Made us five stay on. We stayed on. We should have come home. And we stayed on. And when we stayed on, a chap come up to me. He said, he was a sergeant in X Platoon. He said, I've just come from one of the islands off of Singapore, been playing football. He said, and the chap come up to me and asked me if I knew Corporal Rogers. So I said, no, I don't know Corporal Rogers. So he said, this chap said, he's on the MT. He's a corporal on the MT, a ginger-headed chap. Oh, you mean Ginger? So he said, why? He said, well, I'm his younger brother. Because my younger brother was dark as I was pale. He took after me mother. And, we met up in Singapore. And,
You and your brother?
Yeah, me and my brother. And we had a month together, and the island he was on, they were rationed on water. They were only allowed 2 pints of beer a week. And of course, when he used to come ashore, the Brigadier Sanders spotted me with him one day, him walking with him, wanting to know what he was doing. I told him. So he said, oh. He said, that's nice. He said, seeing a younger brother. He said, can I see your ID? I don't think he really trusted me, but still. My brother showed him his naval pay book. And he said, oh, okay. Well, evidently, the commander of this little island, they knew each other, and this Brigadier Sanders knew each other well. And my brother got excused all duties. So he was allowed out every night, you know. And because sometimes when I was on duty, he used to get a truck or a carry up to the camp. Gilmore Barracks, it was called, where we was billeted. and he knew where my bed was, and they'd come there and they'd have a shower, kip on my bed and my mate's bed, Roy Snellgrove, okay? Oh. Yeah, and what's called it, they'd have a shower, and they knew the beds were...
Names.
Pardon?